Ryan saw more of the gang's handiwork when he reached the side of what had once been the attractive little ville of Alma. Along the road, the gang members had been using their victims for their pleasure, stopping sometimes to light a small fire to keep themselves warm and to inflict a little pain and torture. Then they moved on, higher up the trail, leaving the corpses discarded by the roadside. The bandits had taken 5 women from Brother Angus's wag. By the time he reached Alma, Ryan had found all of them. Ryan had 2 kinds of anger. One was the sudden flaring rage that he had always found difficult to control, which dated back from when he was a young boy. The veins would throb in his temple, and the scar across his cheek would pulse like a disturbed snake. A crimson mist seemed to filter across his mind, sometimes snatching away his combat senses. It was something that seemed to happen much less often than it used to, and Ryan could now, generally, bring it quickly under control. And there was the other kind of anger, the kind that was slow to be triggered, but gradually gathered its own murderous momentum. It was like a cold flame that burned with a terrible, clean light. The short fuse anger would come and go within a minute, but the kind of rage that now seeped through Ryan's mind and body would be extinguished only when he'd taken revenge on the gang of mindless, brutish murderers. It was impossible to tell when the fires had been set, but their smell still lingered. The cracked and blackened timbers streamed with water, and every last spark was long extinguished. At least there weren't too many bodies. It looked as if a lot of the inhabitants of Alma had gotten wind of the raiders and managed to make their escape, possibly down the trail toward the old interstate. A row of 4 men had been crucified to a barn wall, with long steel nails splitting their palms and ankles. One had been hung upside down, and because a fire had been lit beneath him, little remained of his charred skull and torso. Once again, it was cruelty for its own sake, tainted with the special sickness of the stickies in the gang. Most of the township had been fired, with every building on the main drag either destroyed or seriously damaged. Night was closing in, and the endless rain showed no sign of abating. 2 in the last half mile, Ryan had come across evidence of serious earth slips, where the dirt had absorbed all the water it could and had given way in a wall of streaming mud.
I best get to shelter.
Glancing around through the gloomy rain, Ryan could see that some of the side streets of the little ville seemed to be untouched by fire. Movement caught his eye, and he saw what looked like a dozen or more tiny mice scurrying across from one building to another. Ahead of him, he could make out a row of wooden shacks, some of them already tumbled, built against a steep slope that held some stunted pines. He thought he could see the remnants of an ancient mine a little higher up the hillside, but it was getting too dark to be sure. Ryan picked his way through the muddy puddles, trying to decide which of the cottages looked the most solid. 4 or 5 of them seemed to have been inhabited, with unbroken glass in windows, curtains, and decent front doors. One had a few scrubby rose bushes tangled around a white picket fence, and a hand-painted nameplate on the gate. Ponderosa, it was called. Ryan took a last look around the dead township, checking that he wasn't being watched, then walked up the narrow path to the front door. The door was locked. There wasn't the usual dead flat smell of a long empty building, and Ryan hesitated before entering. Food had been cooked within the last day or so, and he could smell lamp oil.
You got 3 seconds to tell me why I shouldn't blast your cock clean out your ass.
The woman was crouched in the doorway of what Ryan guessed was likely the kitchen.
I could use 10 seconds if you don't mind. I don't think 3'll do it.
3's plenty if you're the murdering bastard that I take you for. Speak out quick. I can see you silhouetted against the front door real good. Not gonna miss with my 12-gauge old Betsy here.
Sure you're not. The name's Ryan Carter. I come from out in the Shens. On my way to Fairplay to meet up with my wife and some friends. Came across a party that had been attacked on the trail. Said it was a gang of Norms and Stickies. I seen plenty of their work. They fire the ville?
Of course they did, Stoop. Hadn't been for the heaviest damn rain I known in 50 years of living in Alma, everything be gone.
Most folks get away?
Yeah.
Now that his sight was becoming accustomed to the semi-darkness, Ryan could see her, kneeling on the floor, about 15 feet in front of him.
They've been gone long? Killers, I mean?
Half day. I'm not sure I believe your story, mister. You took a gamble on coming here.
Didn't know anyone was left in the Ville.
Still gamble? You a gambling man?
Best I know is to not hit 17 when you bet against the dealer. There was no response.
Ryan stood still, not wanting to make any move that might leave him on his back, staring at the ceiling with a belly full of buckshot.
You still there, lady?
Yeah. I guess I can't see why you'd have come back on your own if you're one of those devils. They only go around in gangs.
It all comes down to you believing me and letting me in. Or you don't believe me and you gut shoot me and that's the end of the line. It's up to you. But it's damn cold and wet waiting out here.
Damned arthritis creeps up in rainy weather. Just come in and close the door, mister. What'd you say your name was?
Ryan Carter. You wouldn't have some light, would you?
Lamps attract the wrong kind of interest, Mr. Carter. Some of my friends found that out when the gang hit us.
I believe that they've moved on, higher up, toward fair play and harmony.
Stand still, so you don't knock over any of my valuables. I'll tug the curtains closed and we can risk a light. Come in, Mr. Carter. But remember, I still got Betsy here in case you got fancy ideas.
My only idea is to try and get dry and warm. I don't even know your name.
Ryan walked into a neat parlor with a pedal harmonium in one corner and the remains of a fire glowing in the hearth. A copper scuttle held some cut logs. The main impression was of a comfortable clutter of ornaments.
I'm Elvira Madison.
She looked to be around 40, with a mop of bushy hair tied with a red ribbon. She had a perky face and bright eyes, but her heavy body, swollen legs, and twisted hands showed the extent that the arthritis had her in its thrall. Elvira was wearing a skirt of hand-woven wool and a blouse of embroidered cotton, and she was holding a single-barrel Model 94C Stevens shotgun as if she was still ready to use it.
Seen enough, Mr. Carter?
Sorry, I didn't mean to stare. Just that this part of Colorado seems flooded with death. And it's good to see someone as alive as you.
Flattery gets you everywhere. You look like a hard man, Mr. Carter, but not a vicious one. Hope I'm right in that.
The woman leaned her shotgun against the arm of a side chair.
I was going to put on some stew. How's that sound? And there's a pile of blankets in the spare room. Probably damp with all the rain, but they'll dry out. Strip off and get your clothes dry.
She saw the look on his face.
Doubt you got anything that I haven't seen before, Mr. Carter. I'm a widow with three husbands in the graveyard yonder. You can peel bare naked, and I won't blink.
She made her careful way to the hall, pausing to smile back at him.
Might not blink, but I might ask you to jump my bones later. Ha ha! Been a while.
And then she disappeared into the kitchen. Ryan intended to take her advice about getting himself and his clothes dry, but he walked around the room first, letting some of the day's tension ease away. Elvira kept her little home in bright, new pin condition. There were bits of china and glass all over the place. Taking pride of place in the center of the mantel was a porcelain figure of a swarthy man in a white-fringed jumpsuit with a jeweled buckle. He had long sideburns and carried a guitar. Ryan wasn't absolutely sure, but he thought it was probably a statue of St. Elvis. Elvira reappeared, hobbling with the aid of a stick.
Couldn't hold this and Betsy as well. Have to be getting hold of some cubits of gopher wood and building me an ark if this goes on. I never knew the like.
Ryan turned to the woman. The house had moved.
Shit!
The ceiling was splintering apart. Ryan glimpsed up and saw the dark sky beyond the walls. Then, the ceiling came down.
Oh, Gaia!
Christy stopped walking through the evening darkness, almost doubling over, both her hands snatching at her forehead. She pressed at her eyes as though they were bursting from their sockets. Doc was alongside, and he reached for her, putting an arm around her shoulder, supporting her, saving her from dropping to her knees in the watery mud that covered the trail.
My dearest lady, have you turned your ankle?
No, not that. I just got a dreadful jolt to my mind.
JB, Mildred, and Jack gathered around her, barely visible in the streaming drizzle.
Is it Ryan?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Something bad, something real bad. It hit me like a lightning bolt in the brain.
Any idea what it is or where he is?
Not too far away. It was so triple strong. About the most powerful seeing I ever had.
Dad?
He was falling, and the world was spinning about him like he was lost in space. I don't know. Just that it's serious, and I don't believe it's chilled him outright.
We're at the bottom of the valley. Should be finding somewhere for the night. You want to push on up the grade?
We could easily pass by whatever's the trouble in the dark. Let's try and find somewhere out of this rain, then get moving at first light. And hope we find him.
For several long seconds, Ryan was totally disoriented, not knowing where he was or what had happened. He struggled to bring back the memory of the last few seconds before the world fell in on him. Aware of a ringing pain behind his left ear, becoming aware that something was pinning him down below the waist, holding him immobile.
House fell.
The details of the incident slowly came back to him.
Must have been on an earth slip.
Ryan's right hand was free, but his left arm was trapped beneath him. By feeling, he could work out that the floor had opened and he dropped into it, leaving him caught around the ankles and thighs by a tangle of jagged beams and joists. Some torn carpet was bulked up and wrapped around his waist, preventing him from getting at either the Sig Sauer or the Panga. It was almost full dark, but there was a faint glimmer of ragged moonlight breaking through tatters of high cloud, enough for him to see a pale blur of white only a few inches from his face.
Elvira? Elvira? You hear me?
There was no response. Ryan made an effort to move his legs and kick himself free. Something had moved down below, pinching his ankle. He had the sensation that everything had settled a little more firmly around him. He suddenly realized that his legs were also immersed to the knees in watery mud, thick and clinging like ice-cold gravy. He wriggled his head sideways, trying to locate the moon, but it had vanished. The woman's face was barely visible, just in front of him.
Elvira! You hear me? Hang in there! I got friends. Friends on the way. Could be here sometime after dawn. Just hang on.
The sky finally cleared, and in the moonlight, Ryan was able to see his wrist chron. It was only a little after midnight. He could also see the way Elvira was lying. A large roof timber had her pinned to the ruined floor. She was flat on her stomach, hands out of sight, hair dark with black, congealing blood. Her eyes closed. A deep cut dripped more blood from the side of her mouth, exposing the broken end of a denture. There was something sticking into her throat from beneath, which Ryan finally decided was the headless statue of Elvis. She had stopped breathing. A short while after her passing, the first of the tiny rodents appeared, the same breed that he'd spotted scampering through the puddles when he arrived in the heart of the burned-out ville. They reminded him of the notorious Cuddlies, furry little golden bears that looked like every child's bedtime ideal. The unbelievably vicious creatures had left young Jack Lauren with two deep scars on his face, near his mouth, that he would carry with him to the grave. Soon they were pouring over the wreckage like a black tide, none of them any larger than his thumb, with tiny dark eyes and miniature razor teeth. For several minutes, they paid him no attention at all. When one of them came close and began to climb up onto Ryan's jacket, he looked at its muty eyes.
Ah! Go away!
But the mice only vanished for a few moments. There now seemed to be even more of them. It was as if they'd enlisted reinforcements from the whole of the devastated little township. It was about then that Ryan also became aware that the watery mud was rising around him and had reached his groin.
Fire blast.
He flexed his fingers, looking down, to see that the muty rodents were turning their attention to him. Some of them were also interested in the dead, staring face of Elvira Madison. They covered her skull like a shifting hood of dark hair, with occasional glimpses of bloody skin beneath.
Get the fuck out of here!
Ryan batted his right hand at them, disturbing them for a few moments. Only this time, they didn't all vanish. Hundreds of microscopic eyes watched him fixedly. The moon showed him all too well the danger from the furry mice. In less than a half minute, they'd virtually flayed the skin from Elvira's skull, less than a yard from him, also removing eyes and lips and much of the nose. Even as Ryan stared at the horror that she had become, a blood-sodden rodent emerged from her open mouth and dropped off into the wrecked timbers. As he waved his arm threateningly at the creatures, he felt some of the beam shifting, pinning him even more tightly, sucking him lower into the watery trap. If they could swim below the surface, then he was instantly irrevocably doomed. But he had noticed that their fluffed-up fur held so much air, it was impossible for them to dive. Indeed, it was almost impossible for them to drown unaided. Doc and Jack were fast asleep. JB and Mildred had been whispering for some time, snuggled together, but they'd finally fallen quiet as well. Only Christy remained awake, lying in the corner of the ruined cabin, just off Highway 9. She kept remembering something that Ryan had said a few days earlier, how the thing he hated most was vermin, rats, mice, and any kind of rodent. But Christy couldn't understand why she kept on recalling that conversation, eventually deciding that it had to have something to do with Ryan's current predicament. Christy prayed to Gaia and to the forces of the Earth Mother that she was wrong. Despite all her skills, she still wasn't able to embrace sleep, lying with emerald eyes open, staring out at the starry night, worrying about Ryan. The only bright spot was that it had finally stopped raining. Ryan watched the seething army of vermin, turning his head to try to check that they weren't coming at him from behind. 200 or 300 had edged closer until they were within his reach. His hand shot out, grabbing a fistful of mice and plunging them below the scummy surface of the water around him. He held tight, ignoring the biting, until the wriggling stopped. When he opened his hand, a dozen or more little corpses bobbed into sight. One or two had struggled free and were climbing out of the water onto the ruins of the house.
That's one for me, you little shit.
The icy floodwater was now over his waist, and he started to worry about snakes. But he pushed that particular thought to the back of his mind. There were three much more likely ways that he was going to die. Crushed if the beam slipped anymore, drowned if the water continued to rise, and eaten alive if the rodents finally massed and attacked him all at once. The way things were going, his best guess was that one of the three would have happened by dawn. Christy touched JB's shoulder, and he opened his eyes.
What?
We should go.
Now? Well, what is it, danger?
Not here, but I have this triple-strong feeling that Ryan is in deep trouble.
Dawn in an hour or so. We could wait until then.
Move fast into light.
Could be too late then.
She gripped JB hard by the shoulder.
Now!
Ryan had lost count of how many of the mutant vermin he'd crushed and drowned. All that he was really aware of was the undeniable fact that they kept on coming. At each time, there were more of them. At each time, they were bolder. Twice in the past half hour, his own violent reaction to the rodents had caused the timbers around him to slip, tightening their embrace on his legs and left arm, squeezing and crushing his chest. Though it hadn't rained again for hours or so, the level of water around him had continued to rise steadily until it was now across the top of his chest, scant inches from his face. A raft of little furry corpses bobbed around him on top of the dull surface. He had lost all sense of feeling below the waist from the icy flood. There were 15 or 20 minor cuts and bites on his right hand and arm, but nothing serious. Ryan knew that it wouldn't be long before the diminutive rodents gathered themselves and made a concerted rush at him. Hundreds would cover his head and chest and swarm over his eye and mouth, suffocating and blinding him. He watched them in the moonlight. They were moving restlessly all over the ruins of the house, occasionally coming down to feast on Elvira's corpse. There was enough illumination for Ryan to see the progress of their ravenous devouring. The dead woman's skull gleamed white, with ragged patches of matted hair and threads of gristle dangling from it. Ryan guessed dawn was still a good half hour away. He sensed that the ultimate attack was about to begin, and he readied himself to go down fighting. The first tremulous gleam of the false dawn lightened the sky, but the trail up toward the outlying houses in the small village of Alma was still in darkness, rutted, muddy, and treacherous. Christy had encouraged the others along in her wake, with poor old Doc struggling with the cold, the dark, and the altitude at the rear.
Gotta get there. Come on, guys, we gotta get there. Ryan needs us triple bad.
But we don't know where he is. He could be up at Fairplay by now.
No, closer than that. Much closer.
Suppose Coldheart's still around.
I can't feel them. No smell of fresh fires. No lights. I'm certain that they're well ahead of us up the mountain someplace. Probably in Harmony itself. That's my feeling.
Feelings. Feeling appealing, while the dealing is reeling. Healing apples and pealing bells, congealing like the faint aroma of performing seals. If we don't stop soon, then my feeling is that blood will begin to gush from my mouth, nose, ears, and eyes. I am certain that I can feel a nosebleed just waiting to begin.
Christy stopped and swung on him.
Doc, there's plenty of times I find you real cute. This isn't one of them. Ryan's life is on the line, and we need to get there. The faster we go, the better the chance. Even our fastest might be too fucking slow. Right?
Right. I am properly chastened. Let us proceed, and I shall strain every nerve and fiber to get there with you.
Get the fuck off of me!
Ryan beat back yet another attack. But now he had blood streaming down his cheeks and over his good eye from a score of bites. The furry mice retreated again, but Ryan had reached the end of his line. When they came again, he would have to let go of the room joist that he clung to with all his failing strength. Then the shifting, sliding rubble of the building would quickly tug him below the surface. Of the optional methods of death, he was now certain that he was going to be drowning.
Better than being rat food.
The companions looked across what remained of Alma.
Bandits cleared this place. Must have been the endless rain put out all the fires and saved some of the houses off the main street.
Another day, another dollar.
You think this place is where Ryan's trapped?
Christy nodded, looking around at the burned-out buildings and the rivers of water and mud that seemed to run everywhere. As JB had said, several of the buildings at the back of the main street were all right, though she could see that there had been a major earth slip to one side that had felled a solid block of four houses, reducing them to tangles of matchwood.
How we find him?
Christy looked around, searching.
Close. That way. By the ruined homes.
Best ways to shout for him. Spread out a little and all walk through, yelling out his name. Best I can think of.
Christy chose the side street that held the tumbled houses.
Ryan!
It was very doubtful that a single person in Deathlands could have survived as long as Ryan under such appalling, life-threatening circumstances. But everyone had a breaking point, a point at which hope ran out and the senses became numbed and the muscles could no longer hold on. And Ryan had reached that point. He was stretching every sinew to hold his head strained back, the oily water reaching his mouth. There was an increasing pressure around his ribs that was crushing his lungs. He could make out a lightning in the sky, the glow reflected off the hundreds and hundreds of tiny black eyes that were all fixed on his weakening struggles. It crossed his mind that at least he was going to die in daylight, if not in the blackness of night.
And with my boots on.
For a moment he relaxed, and his face dipped under the water. Ryan was afraid he was beginning to hallucinate. It seemed to him that the muddy rodents were mocking him as death crept inexorably closer, even calling him by name.
Ryan! Ryan!
No!
Ryan, here?
Here! Over here in the ruins of the house! Quick!
I hear you, Ryan!
Christie! This way!
A shadow suddenly appeared between Ryan and the rising sun.
Gaia!
Christie picked up a hunk of wood.
Gaia! Get away, you little bastards! Stop!
Be careful. The whole place is like a booby trap. One wrong move, and it'll take me under.
Christie reached down and touched him on the cheek.
Hang on, lover. We'll soon have you out.
I found him! Over here, quickly! And step careful!
Is everyone all right?
Sure. What can I do?
Support the back of my neck if you can. But watch where you move.
Don't worry. A couple of minutes and we'll get you free. That's all.
Ryan's friends gathered around him, shocked to see him almost completely submerged and pinned by heavy beams of wood. Near Ryan was the gnawed corpse of Elvira.
What the hell happened to her?
Vermin!
Everyone looked over the wreckage, trying to figure out a way to pull Ryan out.
Pulling won't work. It might make things worse.
How about draining some of this water?
Yeah.
John Barrymore, can you blast a hole in that wall?
JB took out his Uzi and aimed it at one of the ruined walls. He had opened up a small hole through which the rain spillage poured, lowering the level to around Ryan's chest.
Now what?
It is a simple problem in three-dimensional physics and mathematics, my dear. There are disparate stresses acting here and here, with the weight being transmitted through the longitudinal cross-section of the roofing timbers. As far as we can tell, below the water there is a similar maze that holds Ryan trapped by the legs and waist.
Think we should drop other beams along, Ryan. Take the weight off of him. We try and move the timber, it'll all collapse like a house of cards.
I believe that our ivory-headed young companion might have deduced a possible solution. Try and build a sort of cage, as it were, around Ryan. If we can find something strong enough to use as a lever...
This could take us days. I know he's not in immediate danger from drowning anymore, but most of his body's been immersed in freezing water for about 10 hours or more. Hypothermia is becoming more and more of a reality to steal his life out from under our eyes.
We could get a fire going and boil plenty of water. Pots and pans all over the ville. Then we could pour it in around him and take off the biting chill.
Mwah!
JB's sallow face blushed after Mildred kissed his cheek.
Brilliant. Hot water and plenty of it.
You ladies can undertake that. John Barrymore Dix and Master Lauren and I will work on the lad's scheme. Come, gallants all, and let's away to try our fortunes on this happy day.
Ryan was aware of the sun moving steadily across the bright blue sky, visible through the cracks and holes in the wreckage that surrounded him. Noon came and went. Only his arm had been freed since the arrival of his friends. The hot water helped a little in taking off the chill, and he could actually feel life returning to his numbed lower legs and feet. Christie stayed close to him, making sure the rodents didn't return, keeping up his spirits while they had brought each other up to date with their news. They had agreed that the prospect of finding Harmony untouched by the murderous gang of Norms and Muties was remote. They had both seen too much evidence of the brutal murders committed by the thugs.
Part of me wants to get you out and then turn around and head back for Glenwood Springs. Up into the hills to the redoubt and jump out of here. And part of me wants to go ahead and look. Just for my peace of mind. Whatever we find up there in Harmony won't be any worse than my imagining what might have happened.
Ryan nodded, reaching up to hold her right hand in both of his.
We'll see what's there. I got me a blood score against these swift and evil bastards. Seems you couldn't turn a corner of the trail without coming on another crucified corpse.
Jack appeared, carrying a length of tubular steel scaffolding across his scrawny shoulder.
Think this should do the trick?
He moved cautiously. He looked down into the dark depths of the water and slid the end of the tube down, angling it between Ryan's trapped legs through a gap in the timbers.
Hey, watch what you're doing with that. I have hopes of fathering more children.
Ryan felt the steel easing between two of the main roof joists that kept him helplessly trapped.
That'll do it.
Mildred, Doc, and JB ventured back through the wreckage and saw what Jack was trying to do.
This'll do it.
All right, everyone help.
With both arms free, Ryan himself was able to give them some help, bracing his feet against the bottom of the pole, sensing where the snarled, twisted mass of broken wood was weakest. The others all managed to find a platform for their own pushing and pulling, standing and waiting, gripping the steel pole, until Jack gave them the word to start. He knelt on the slick planking of what had once been the floor of the attic.
You ready, Ryan?
Sure. Let's do it. If I feel things breaking up, I'll be the first to yell.
Jack stood again, finding a place on the steel for his own hands.
Now!
Ryan was at the heart of things, his whole body sensitive to the slightest movement of the gripping timbers. The scaffolding pole was firmly grounded, and everyone's weight made it bite hard into the wreckage.
Hold it! You all right, Ryan?
Sure. Some of the pressure's gone off of my chest. Try it tilted a bit more that way. Yeah, a bit more. That's it. Now, go for it again.
Now!
Once again, everyone strained. Doc's knee boots slipped, and he fell sideways.
By that freak! Sorry, people.
Shifting something.
The weight on Ryan's chest was much easier, but something was still gripping his left ankle like a man trap.
That done it?
Nearly. I could almost climb out, except for my foot. My left foot.
Jack slapped the cold steel.
Easy, Al.
He then knelt and peered into the murk.
Need to get down there and slide the end of the pole into exactly the right place.
I could do that.
No, me. I'm the smallest. Agile. I slip down easy.
You could get yourself caught. No way anyone could rescue you from that tangle down there.
I take the chance.
Jack drew one of his throwing knives.
When I'm in the right place, I'll rap with this. Listen for it. Then shove with all your shit.
Without another word, Jack was beneath the water. Mildred leaned over and could still see the white flare of his hair floating like a baby's caul around Jack's narrow skull. Ryan could feel the teenager's lithe body twisting sinuously around his legs while the end of the steel scaffolding pole also moved from side to side.
Listen for the sound.
The seconds ticked by.
Been down there a while. Can you signal him to come up, Ryan?
No.
Jack seemed motionless, and the tip of the pole was no longer moving.
It's been over a minute now.
There was a swirl in the water, as though a large fish had passed by.
Ah, the signal!
Everyone threw their strength against the 20-foot length of steel. Ryan felt the pressure slip off his ankle, and he kicked out, reaching to pull himself up onto the section of planking. He looked for Jack behind him, but couldn't see anything moving in the water.
Jack!
Jack emerged with a smile and a blade gripped in his teeth.
By the gods! You look like Israel Hands from Treasure Island. Well done, young man. Wonderfully well done.
Let's help them out of there.
Ryan embraced Jack, feeling his own body still trembling from the tension of the experience.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks.
We've got a fire going, lover. Let's all get ourselves dry.
Best offer I've had in days.